Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Dinah Jansen, and today I'm joined by CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative producer Jesse Bell. Our first story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter Christina Laurie, covering the release of the newest line of Kingston Landmark holiday ornaments, a local tradition entering its 31st year.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca.
The holiday season is starting to take shape downtown, and with it comes one of the Downtown Kingston BIA's annual traditions, a new pewter ornament collection. Now in its 31st year, the series continues to document some of the city's most iconic buildings and landmarks. This year's lineup includes three new buildings, a well-loved park, and a piece marking a major local college anniversary. I spoke with Jan McDonald, Downtown Kingston's Director of Events, about this year's collection. So the collection has been part of our holiday season for over 30 years now. I was wondering if you could tell us a bit about the tradition and what you think makes it such a hit every year.
I know, it's kind of crazy that every year we still find buildings and these sort of cultural sort of assets in the city to make into pewter ornaments. You'd think after this is our 31st year that we would sort of run out of buildings, but no, Kingston is so historically rich that, you know, it seems like we have an endless pool to choose from. So so we've been doing this for 31 years, five ornaments every year. We get suggestions. We have so many customers who have every single collection from year one. They get super excited whenever we would do the new release. But we get suggestions all the time, a lot of suggestions from Kingstonians, which is great. It's always a fun thing to do. I think it's really nice for locals, but then, you know, we have a lot of collections that are like Queen's buildings or, you know, nice sort of commemorative things that you can give as gifts, which is really great. So if you have, you know, kids attending Queen's, it's a nice little Christmas gift. We do things like, you know, tragically hip collections. So if you have like hip fans in your family, I think they give really well as gifts. And then it's just sort of a nice thing to sort of recognize those places in the city that have, you know, special meaning for you.
Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, this lineup includes a lot of iconic places in Kingston. I was wondering if you could walk us through the 2025 releases and maybe a bit about how some of them were chosen.
So this year's lineup is really wonderful. So we start out next week with the Bages Brewery, which is a beautiful building that has since been turned into condos. But it is on Wellington Street. Following that, we have Louise House. So Louise House is on Johnson Street, and it's sort of an architectural treasure. It began as a new schoolhouse for the Kingston Board of Trustees. Just a really, really beautiful building. Queen students would especially recognize this building because it is now the Starbucks on the corner of Johnson and Division. So that's the building we're talking about there. The Broom Factory is week three. So one of the main, I would say, live music venues in the city used to be a broom factory. And now, like I said, it operates as a live music venue. It also houses like the Kingston Canadian Film Festival, Prue. So lots of sort of creative brains in that building. Fourth week is McBurney Park, or more commonly known as Skeleton Park. So Skeleton Park is, you know, definitely one of the most popular sort of gathering spaces for young families in the downtown core. They do a wonderful festival every year, Skeleton Park Arts Fest. And it has like a pretty fun history. It was established in 1800s as Kingston's upper burial ground, which is sort of why it got the sort of Skeleton Park name, but very, very cool. And then finally, week five, it's sort of the ornament itself has a number of different sort of iconic emblems of the Royal Military College of Canada. So it's RC, the RMC ornament, which again, we've done a lot with Queens. We have in the past sort of touched on some of the RMC monuments, but this is sort of an all-encompassing like RMC ornament because their 150th anniversary is coming up. So that's this year's lineup.
Awesome. And I'm sure a lot of these were community suggestions, but I was wondering if any of these were like people have been asking for them like crazy and you guys were like, we have to do it this year.
Definitely Skeleton Park, we get a lot. That one's a little bit tricky. Buildings are a little bit more simple in terms of rendering into an ornament. Skeleton Park is a very cool one because we sort of used an aerial shot to sort of fashion the ornament. But the Skeleton Park community, sort of that community, it's a very close-knit community. And so, yeah, we get a lot of suggestions for that one. And then I'm not sure how the other ones came in. I think we always look for buildings that have some kind of historical significance so that we can tell the story of the building. I do think it was someone from Queens who talked about the Starbucks building though, because yeah, we know it as the Starbucks, but it's kind of cool that, that it started as a schoolhouse.
Mm-hmm. You're also including past ornaments this year, which is a new kind of thing. I was wondering if you could talk a bit about that. Yeah. What made you guys this year decide to offer that?
Yeah, so on our website, which is downtownkingston.ca, we still have ornaments available from past collections. So we definitely, you know, popular ones go pretty quick. And so, you know, they tend to sell out pretty fast. But it's kind of surprising going back 31 years what we still have in our catalog here. And so you can go on the website and take a look through the years. Maybe you're trying to fill in some gaps in your own collection or just kind of see what we've done historically. But those are available to purchase. They're around $8 each. And then we've put together little themed collections this year. So we have one that's a Tragically Hip themed collection. So in there, it would be the Gord Downie Pier, the hip sign at Slush Puppy Place, things like that. We've also done one which is sort of those classic Kingston sort of buildings. When you know, you come to Kingston, you have to see City Hall, you have to see Kingston Penn, that sort of thing. So really fun, cute little themed collections that are also available on the website.
You also have that connection where folks bring their downtown shopping receipts. I was wondering if you could just talk about that connection to supporting local business as well.
Yeah. So the whole program started, like you said, we are a BIA, and so it's really important that we support our member businesses and try to drive business and keep downtown as lively and vibrant as we can. And so in order to purchase the new collection, so the old collections are available on our website, as I mentioned. The new collection, you have to present $25 worth of receipts from downtown. So it could be a cafe, could be a retail shop, it could be your dentist. It could be food basics like the grocery store. So any downtown business, you present $25 worth of receipts and the ornament is $10. So, and the ornaments are available in three locations starting on Monday. So they're available at the Grand Theater box office. They're available at the Slush Puppy Place box office and the Visitor Information Center, which is across from City Hall. So you go in with your $25 worth of receipts and the ornaments are available to you at $10.
You've been listening to Jan McDonald with the Downtown Kingston BIA on this year's new pewter ornament collection. For more details on the designs and the release schedule, more information is available at downtownkingston.ca. For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
Thank you, Chris. Next is Dinah Jansen with a story from the local Journalism Initiative reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, Keith Dempsey, about the teardown of Gananoque's train bridge.
Thank you, Jesse. Mayor John Beddoes says newly confirmed structural data from the demolition of the King Street train bridge in Gananoque shows the town's long-closed crossing had deteriorated beyond repair and stands as a cautionary example of what happens when municipal assets go without maintenance. The demolition, approved in a 4-3 council vote earlier this year, is being carried out under a contract worth $488,900. According to Beddoes, conditions uncovered during the teardown affirm that both the overland and overwater sections of the structure were unsound, with years of moisture trapped beneath a wooden boardwalk accelerating decay. Beddoes pointed to Ontario Structure Inspection Manual inspection reports dating back to 2010, which repeatedly recommended maintenance and called for more detailed assessments. He said no significant work was done between the town assuming ownership of the bridge in 1997 and its closure in 2022, and suggested the asset could likely have been preserved had maintenance funding been prioritized. The bridge removal has been one of the town's most contentious issues this year. In June, Gananoque's Integrity Commissioner advised that Beddoes could not use Ontario Strong Mayor veto to overturn council's decision, ruling that his reasoning tied to potential future infrastructure funding fell outside the scope of the legislation. Council ultimately supported removal, with Deputy Mayor Vicky Leakey and Councillors Matt Harper, Patrick Kirkby, and David Osmond voting in favour, and Beddoes and Councillors Anne-Marie Coyner and Colin Brown opposed. The demolition comes amid ongoing community pushback, including an online petition led by the Save Our Train Bridge group. Beddoes said the town must now use the experience to guide future infrastructure planning and ensure its asset management plan is properly funded. Thank you to Keith Dempsey for that story. Now over to Jesse Bell with a story from the LGR reporter for YGK News, Owen Fullerton, about Queen's University's response to a hateful video filmed in the university district.
Thank you, Dinah. Queen's University has released a statement condemning a video that is circulated on social media, which includes transphobic and anti-Semitic content, and was recorded during parties held off-campus in the university district on homecoming. The university says that the video has been, quote, erroneously attributed to Queen's students, and that once identified, action was immediately taken by the school to have the video removed, which it has since been. Queen's condemned the video and said the people involved with the video primarily are not affiliated with Queen's University. The university reiterated its support for the transgender community in its statement, highlighting the, quote, acute harm given the timing of the video, surfacing during Transgender Awareness Week. Queen's University's statement, shared last Thursday morning, came a day after PSAC 901, the union representing grad student workers at Queen's, released its own statement on the video, calling for the university to act concretely. PSAC 901 said the harmful content fits into a pattern at the university, referencing controversies involving marginalized communities at Queen's in semi-recent history, including a racist image circulated of an AMS executive candidate, racist and homophobic notes left in Chown Hall in 2019, and more recently, the controversy stirred up when a professor repeatedly used the N-word in class while reciting lyrics during a 2024 Law 320 evidence class. Quote, "We condemn this behavior unequivocally," the statement from the union read. The statement made a connection between the racist and transphobic video and the aforementioned Law 320 video, and noted that these incidents highlighted, quote, "a persistent cultural problem at Queen's, where bigotry continues to emerge and institutional responses remain inconsistent or insufficient." The union added that their health and safety officer has requested an opportunity to engage with the university to discuss concrete steps and how it plans to address the, quote, "recurring harms faced by equity-seeking groups."
Thank you, Jesse. Now over to the LJI reporter for CJAI-FM Amherst Island Radio with a story about local reactions to a residential tax rate increase in Loyalist Township.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, local journalism initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca. Loyalist Township's latest draft budget for 2026 shows a residential rate increase of 4.93%. The township held its first of three budget meetings as they prepare for their 2026 budget. The draft 2026 operating budget results in a township levy requirement of almost $24.6 million. This is a 6.4% increase from 2025. According to staff's report, the township experienced development in 2025, resulting in assessment growth totaling $300,000. This growth helped reduce the tax rate by 1.3% down to the currently proposed 4.93% increase. The township's director of finance and treasurer, David Clazy, explains the increase and notes numbers they'll be gathering going forward.
When it comes to tax rates, I just want to be clear that when we're talking about a 4.93% tax increase, we're only talking about the township portion of a tax bill. And of course, there are three components to a tax bill, that being one of the components. We then have the Lennox and Addington County tax rates, which is also makes up part of the bill. And we don't have those rates yet. They're generally set early in the spring. So once we have those, that will be the next component. And then we have the education rates that are set by the province. Now, at this point, they haven't been set yet, but they haven't changed in the last two or three years, mainly because there hasn't been a reassessment. So we're assuming they will probably not change, but we don't have that confirmation as of yet. So the conversations over the next couple of days are just about the township portion of that bill. And then once we have those other rates confirmed in the future, then that'll make up the total of the remainder of the bill.
Members of the committee voiced their concerns about the increase and noted they'd like to see it under 4%. Councillor Lorna Willis shared her thoughts.
I appreciate the work the staff have done, and I can tell that a lot of pencil sharpening was done before this budget was brought to us. I still do choke a bit at 4.93% in a year when people are very much struggling just to buy groceries and things like that. Though I understand, too, that we have to continue to offer services and follow through on all of the master plans that we've done and things like that.
Councillor Mike Buderick spoke about the rate increase and suggested more discussion along with more public engagement.
Under 4 would be ideal. I think we could, as council, could take some time to maybe throw some email suggestions back, too, as we let this sink in. Maybe think to community itself on what they're actually looking for and see where we might be able to cut.
Councillor Carol Park spoke about keeping it under 4% as well.
I agree with my colleagues. I think coming under 4% is where we need to be.
Councillor Paul Broderick noted the difficulty in prioritizing items on the budget.
Maybe look at some of the low priority items that could be eliminated, because obviously if we have a scale and so on, there's going to be some that, and I think the problem probably with the low priority items are going to be small dollar values, but maybe if they could go back and look at maybe that and maybe a one or two of sort of the medium proposals, just to get an idea if we can get down to that magic number that some of us are talking about under 4.
Mayor Jim Hagedorn noted the hard work staff did putting the budget together.
After talking to staff, we realized quickly that this is a hard budget to bring forward. There have been a lot of increases in costs, and trying to keep the increase tax rate at a reasonable rate did take a lot of work. But the work was done. Staff worked very hard to identify areas to be able to trim and be able to bring forward the budget that they did.
Hagedorn noted the impact of the township's newly appointed Strong Mayor powers.
Strong Mayor powers were given to Loyalist Township this year. And as a result, I did work with staff more than what I normally would have during the development of this budget. We mostly to discuss, and also I did provide some direction and suggestions where applicable, trying to make it as streamlined as possible. And with the Strong Mayor powers, one of the things that we wanted to do was keep it as traditional as possible while still meeting all of the requirements of the legislation. I believe we've done that, following the typical process the best we can. Some of the terminology will be a little different with amendments and things like that. But I really hope that we are able to have good discussions and amendments if needed.
Clazy explained removing capital projects won't affect the tax rate.
If there was any of those projects that were the council wanted to remove, then that funding would stay in the capital reserve and be there for future years. So I just wanted to make that clarification, as there's been a couple comments about looking at capital projects, which we can do, but I just want to be clear that that wouldn't necessarily have a direct impact on the 4.93%.
Clazy speaks about funding for the W.J. Henderson Recreation Center.
We have an additional $674,000 built in for staffing and programming at the Henderson Community Center. And again, that's based on the expansion that's gone on there, with the arena now being operational full time. And it also looks at staffing for the pool coming on midway through 2026. So while that's a big number in staffing, it's also important to note that we do have a fair amount of additional revenue coming in terms of user fees and rental fees to offset that. So it's not the full hit, but there is some definitely investment in that.
The draft budget also showed an increase of $40,000 to the township's Family Physician Recruitment Incentive Program to accommodate the signing of two additional physicians. Deputy Mayor Nathan Townend explains staff's next steps going forward.
There's a number of things staff want to do in the background to present to council committee at our next meeting. But what would be helpful for staff right now is any general thoughts, directions from committee of things that people want to see, information people would like to see in more detail, things that committee would like staff to bring back. So general thoughts and perceptions so that staff can gear their work for our next meeting.
Staff will return to council with updates at their next budget meeting scheduled for November 26th. For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you to Ted Evans for that story. Over to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFWN, Dan Jones, with a story about surging food bank usage in Northumberland County.
Northumberland County Food Banks is searching for a new location and better vehicle to increase services in Port Hope. Currently, the food share operates out of the United Church on South Street, but having limited hours restricts how it serves clients. Megan Flindle, executive director, presented to Port Hope Council Tuesday night, anticipating record usage this year. Statistics she provided suggest more than 10,000 visits in Port Hope, an increase of 24% in 2025.
Our numbers have drastically increased, actually doubling since pre-pandemic levels. One additional thing that should be noted is that we see three times the amount of these numbers at our Coburg location, where we are able to operate our services with more frequency and variety of times. So we don't feel that we truly have a full representation for you this evening of food insecure population in Port Hope due to those current limitations of being only open on a Wednesday morning and Wednesday evening.
The Coburg location is open Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday. Flindle stated the organization is looking for stable support from municipal council, possibly in the form of a monthly contribution and lease agreement for a renovated municipal space as well as a repurposed town vehicle. Councillor Les Andrews said there are a few locations which the food share could move to, that being the Lakelands Public Health Unit on Rose Glen Road. Flindle noted that both the Quinty and Whippy food banks lease municipal space for free. Approximately 36% of food bank usage in Port Hope is for children and youth under the age of 18, while 36 to 50-year-olds use the food bank 21% of the time. Reporting for CFWN and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Dan Jones.
And thank you to Dan Jones for that story. Next up is Jesse Bell with CFRC's Environment Canada weather forecast for the Kingston region.
This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Thursday, November 27th, 4 degrees is your high, but it's going to feel much colder, actually feeling closer to minus 4. 65% chance of precipitation, which means we are going to see periods of light snow throughout the day, dropping down to minus 2 overnight, which is going to feel closer to minus 6. Friday, November 28th, 1 is your daytime high with a little bit of sunshine in the forecast, but it's going to be very chilly, feeling closer to minus 7, so bundle up when you're out and about. Saturday, November 29th, high of 0, and it's not going to be as bone-chillingly cold, just a low of minus 2 that will feel like minus 2. Sunday, November 30th, daytime high of 3 degrees, mix of rain and snow in the forecast, dropping down to just below freezing overnight. And then the start of December, Monday, December 1st, daytime high of 5 degrees with a 63% chance of precipitation. This is Jesse Bell with your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. We begin with road closures. Aberdeen Street, William 2 Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Albert Street, Princess to Mac is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. Berry Street, King to Stewart is closed November 25th to 26th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. each day for the removal of a large tree. Berry Street, Queen to Colborne, closed for construction at 283 Queen Street. Earl Street, Collingwood to Toronto, closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Raglan Road, Division 2 Main, closed until November 30th from 7:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. each day for gas main installation. Toronto Street, Durham to Park, is closed until November 28th for installation of new water, sanitary, and storm services. And Victoria Street, Union 2 Johnson, is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Here are some other delays to be aware of. Bay Ridge Drive, Milford to Henderson, expect delays for the construction of new active transportation infrastructure. Catwoods Drive, Centennial to Gardner's, expect delays for the construction of a new multi-use pathway. Front Road, Sand Bay to Country Club, expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main. Traffic will be reduced to one lane in each direction. Montreal Street at John Counter, expect delays for upgrades to the intersection, including new lighting, traffic signals, lanes, paving, and signage. Trudell Road, development to Danbury. Expect delays while a contractor completes road and sidewalk improvements. And Victoria Street and Earl Street. Expect delays while a contractor mobilizes the site to start work on the second phase of reconstruction of sewer, water main, sidewalks, and road.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via CFRC.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.